Tennessee just sounds perfect.
Whether that's live music, the crack of a campfire, or kids laughing on an adventure.
To start planning your trip, visit tnvacation.com.
Tennessee sounds perfect.
Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
The Kakadu plum is an Australian native superfood containing 100 times more vitamin C than oranges. So why have you never heard of it? PR. No one's drinking a Kakadu smoothie? I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward, inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a Gagillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
Ridiculous History is a production of iHeartRadio. Welcome back to the show, Ridiculous Historians. Thank you, as always, so much for tuning in. It is officially now no longer Halloween season. It's still autumn. We're moving on to November. Of course, we're joined with the one and only super producer, Max Williams. They call me Ben, usually. No, this is the second part of our two-part series on a Thanksgiving story that I think neither of us knew about before we started looking into it.
No, it definitely makes sense. Like, because I mean, within this very country, as is pretty much still the case today, there's a bit of a cultural divide at times over certain things, and some things become associated with certain regions that maybe other regions of the country in the South do not abide by or do not appreciate. And that was definitely a thing. We were leading up to the literal Civil War, the war pitting brother against brother and fighting for this idea of whether it was okay to own another human being. Mm-hmm. And we, in our last episode, kind of got to the lead up to this incredible conflict that took place on American soil. But the rhetoric was already starting to heat up, and Thanksgiving was becoming a big talking point. This idea of like, oh, Thanksgiving is a Yankee, you know, abolitionist holiday, and it shouldn't be required, because it was becoming a thing that individual states were starting to pass a day that would be set aside for a Thanksgiving type celebration. And it was becoming this kind of bone of contention, right?
Yeah, exactly. On the other side of the conflict, we have Sarah Hale, who was waging a sort of one woman mission to make everybody get on the same page about celebrating Thanksgiving. But because Thanksgiving was championed by people who were also abolitionists, some Southerners automatically hated it. There was a palpable tension in the room of the country. And that's where part two picks up, because Hale doesn't continue to fight for Thanksgiving on a massive scale when the Civil War hits. Despite the fact that she puts that on pause, a lot of things went on pause during the war. People are still having smaller Thanksgivings of their own, you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, Hale definitely knew how to read the room, as did President Abraham Lincoln himself, who seemed to be inching towards creating a national proclamation that would set Thanksgiving as a national holiday instead of leaving it up to the states. And even though Lincoln himself did have an unofficial Thanksgiving meal with his family just after being elected president, featuring roast turkey and all of those, you know, famous sides that we talked about, really revolving around this notion of good health and prosperity for the family. Despite his enjoyment of those fixins, he could read the room and knew what a divisive subject this was. and decided he would, you know, put a pin in it. So yeah. When the Civil War did break out in earnest on April 12th of 1861, and those plans for a national Thanksgiving holiday took a back seat to the violence between the North and South, Sarah Josepha Hale didn't really stop.
I want to jump in here because to clarify, she was still on her mission, but people yes. weren't paying attention and she didn't That's have right. as much support, even though she was, you know, even though she was still the editorial head of that very popular magazine. What was the name right. of that magazine?
It was a really banal kind of name. It was something like Ladies Journal, something yep. Ladies Journal, if I'm not mistaken.
Godey's Ladies Book. That's
Cody's
it.
Ladies Book. They could have done a better job. But, you know, she was still on her bullshit, you know, on her Thanksgiving, you know, crusade, which was all about kind of creating this idyllic image of Thanksgiving, you know, as a cultural thing that, and also showing that it wasn't necessarily something tied to, you know, either the North or the South or any particular type of religious ideology, which I think is funny because that became a bone of contention for some folks too, the idea that it was a religious holiday, which it really never has been in my eyes, aside from, you know, a few hymns that might have a little bit of a religious connotation. So flash forward a little bit to 1862, the president of the Confederacy, Mr. Jefferson Davis, did issue Thanksgiving Day proclamations after some Southern victories, which is interesting.
Yeah.
Starting to co-opt it a little bit.
Right. Now we've got two competing days of thanks or ideas about how they should be handled, because Lincoln officially calls for Day of Thanks in April of the same year after some Union victories. And then he calls for it again exactly. after the Battle of Gettysburg in 1863. So Hale writes to Lincoln shortly after his summer proclamation, and she also writes to William Seward, then Secretary of State, and she is saying, hey, I hope everything's going all right. I know there's a lot of stuff on your plate right now, but how about we declare a national Thanksgiving? The executive branch has the power to make this holiday a permanent American custom. The exact line she uses is, thus the great Union Festival of America would be established. Lincoln's personal feelings on this immediately after receiving the letter, they may be lost to history, but we know that within just a week of Seward receiving a letter from Hale, he had drafted an official proclamation for President Lincoln, and that's where we get this date. Which always seemed a little confusing to me growing up. The final Thursday in November. It's something that they thought would help heal the nation, which is weird because Southerners didn't like it before the war, right? So how are they going to feel after the war? And why were there two Thanksgivings in 1863?
I've also never been a fan of holidays that are on the something's day of the right. month, you know?
Yeah.
That change from year to year. I just find it confusing. And that's why I swear to God, I thought that Thanksgiving was just always on November 24th, you know? But I'm obviously a dum-dum. But at least, you know, Halloween, steadfast. We know when that is. Christmas, we know when that is. Thanksgiving, a little more amorphous. And I guess it makes sense because it kind of came from these amorphous beginnings. And here's a little snippet of this proclamation. I'm just going to do it in my own voice. I do therefore invite my fellow citizens in every part of the United States, and also those who are at sea and those who are sojourning in foreign lands, to set apart and observe the last Thursday of November next as a day of thanksgiving and praise. Oh, interesting. To our beneficent Father, who dwelleth in the heavens. Wow. Whatever happened to separation of church and state? Wasn't that a thing? Something we're concerned about, Ben?
You know how it is. I mean, there's never been an atheist president.
That's true.
It was even controversial for there to be Catholic presidents, right?
Our beneficent Father who dwelleth in the heavens, though? I mean, come on.
It sounds a little Lovecraftian, honestly. Whenever I hear dwelleth, I think of, I don't immediately think of churches. But
I don't think of that thing, people dwelling in the heavens, by the way. Dwelling is something a giant monster does beneath the sea, in a cave.
Yeah, that's how we associate it, right? He's dead but dreaming. He'll rise, whatever. So big Cthulhu vibes. So this is pre-Cthulhu mythos, of course, so nobody's getting the Lovecraft vibes yet. Lincoln goes on and he urges the citizens of the country to take the opportunity to, here's more religious language, to commend to capital H his tender care all those who have become widows, orphans, mourners, or sufferers in the lamentable civil strife in which we are unavoidably engaged. And then he asks for the interposition of the Almighty Hand to heal the wounds of the nation, talks about divine purpose. There's no official, like, hardcore evidence that Hale's letters caused Lincoln to make this proclamation, but the writing's kind of on the wall, right? This seems like it definitely played a role. And in 1864, he again said, all right, last Thursday in November, got to get together with people. You got to have some kind of Thanksgiving.
Snagajob is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
This episode of Ridiculous History is brought to you by Mint Mobile.
If we've learned anything in the process of doing this podcast, just living life, it's that there's always a catch.
So when we heard that for a limited time, all Mint Mobile wireless plans are $15 a month if you get a 3-month plan, we looked at each other and we thought, nah, what's the catch?
But here's the thing. In this case, there isn't one. Mint Mobile's secret sauce is that they sell wireless service online.
Yeah, they cut out that middleman cost of retail stores and they pass those sweet, sweet savings directly to you. We're not joking. We have tried out Mint Mobile ourselves and it's super convenient. And it actually, like, we tried to find a catch and there's not one.
So to get this new customer offer and your new 3-month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/ridiculous.
That's mintmobile.com/ridiculous. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/ridiculous.
$45 upfront payment required, equivalent to $15 a month. New customers on first 3-month plan only. Speeds slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan.
Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for details. This episode is brought to you by eBay Motors. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Noel, do you remember your favorite car?
Well, yeah, it was an Eddie Bauer edition Ford Explorer.
Oh, that's and cool.
I just remember it was my dad's. I was a hand-me-down car kind of kid. Dad would buy a new car. I'd get that car. And I just remember feeling so awesome being up above everybody, like I was in Mad Max or something, you know?
I had a lot of land yachts that I loved. I had Pontiac Bonnevilles.
Right.
Oh, I never had an El Camino. My dad had one. And that was a real interesting use of our collective time, keeping that thing running. But I think these cars all kind of speak to us because they were such a fundamental part of our lives. Do you remember when I had that Monte Carlo?
That's what I meant. I said El Camino and I meant Monte Carlo.
I miss it. So the Monte Carlo was tough. I had a series of Monte Carlos and the last one, God bless it. I had to learn a lot about car maintenance just to keep that guy running.
Totally.
But it still was like a perfect fit. It's almost like finding your true love. You know, like when you recently got a car a few years back now.
Oh, man. And funny you should say that. That particular perfect fit was the Honda Fit, which I love dearly. But Ben, it's getting a little long in the tooth. And while it's been incredibly reliable up to now, it's getting to that age where I might have to start looking for some parts here and there to keep it running.
Mm-hmm. And that's where eBay Motors comes in. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly.
brake kits, LED headlights, roof racks, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it.
And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back.
Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash.
So keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com.
Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Ben, I got a theory. Thanksgiving turkey. You know, at the top of episode one, I talked about how terrifying I think it is.
Sure.
You know what it looks like? It looks kind of like a Cthulhu.
Oh, I'm going to send you something. I have, this is worth it. I'm just going to drop it in the chat here. I don't know if you guys are aware of this, but you're about to have a wonderful moment. You know, pause for a second through the magic of podcasting so I can share this with you. Okay. This is happening live, folks. I'm gonna spook Max.
Okay.
And
oh, okay.
There it is.
All right, here we go.
Oh my God. It's Turkithulu.
Yes, it's a Kathurki.
A Kathurki, a Tothurki.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. So yeah, this is, what are those freaking
octopus
boiled eggs as eyes?
Yeah, yeah. There are a couple different ones here. There's
an octopus poured out of the cavity with some crab legs coming out of the sides. And oh my God, this is okay.
Yeah.
Well, my theory, Ben, is that H.P. Lovecraft was inspired by the turkey and perhaps this very ominous Thanksgiving proclamation.
Yeah. Let's just put that up. Well, maybe that's what I'll bring to the table when we all get together for the holidays.
Please no. Please God.
I'm in. Except for that second one, Ben. The second one, Ben, looks delicious.
Well, maybe
it's... I'm down to eat Cthulhu. I'm down to try to eat Cthulhu.
Okay. Some Elder one? God flesh.
Now, the second one, I will say the cook on the turkey itself is a little more to my liking.
Right.
I might eat that one. The first one looks almost like the turkey is like raw or something. It's very...
Yeah.
Underdone. Mm-hmm.
But that slight diversion aside, we're just here to show you that there's been a lot of progress and innovation in the world of cooking turkey. Maybe not all of it for the best. Still, that was, you know, the conventional thing that people would eat on Thanksgiving. And the Thanksgiving of 1864 was heavily militarized. There was a lot of propaganda. It was all about thanking the Union troops. And this also shows us some early evidence of the feast becoming the highlight of the holiday. So it's not just generically giving thanks for something now. It's getting together and eating while you give thanks. So they also threw this big feast for Union veterans as part of Thanksgiving.
Yeah, this thing called the Union League Club of New York was very focused on making sure that soldiers, whether they are on land or water or abroad, did not go without a Thanksgiving dinner. And it really has become kind of a thing that charities do as well, like in, you know, underserved communities around the country, is the idea of passing out Christmas turkeys or Thanksgiving turkeys, you know, like out of trucks. It's a thing you do to kind of earn the goodwill of your community, right?
Yeah, yeah. And there's a, you know, this has changed during COVID, but there's a tip that I would like to give people. If you have a little free time, if you can't make it to your own Thanksgiving for scheduling or for travel cost or something, be aware that a lot of those places, especially if you live in a large city, a lot of those places need help. So if you want to volunteer, you will be welcome. There's a thing that you can also do for community service providers, for firefighters, you know, people working in hospitals, just make a snack or make some cupcakes and drop it off because they still have to work. You know what I mean? They don't really get holidays off the way a lot of other people do. Again, that may have changed during COVID. The requirements may be like something has to be sterilized and prepackaged, but I can guarantee you people appreciate it because they're often mm-hmm. doing thankless jobs.
Yeah. And back in the days that we're talking about, the Union League Club of New York got a lot of support from volunteers. They got a lot of support from local restaurants and kitchens that would, you know, volunteer their facilities to cook the food. It would be turkey and cranberry sauce and a lot of those other fixings that we've been talking about. I think by now the chicken pot pie was probably fully gone, which makes me sad because I do love a chicken pot pie. But yeah. Ben, have you had fresh cranberry sauce?
Yeah.
It's actually, like, you know, it's not for everybody, but I will say it is delicious, especially when compared to that awful stuff that slowly slides out of the can in can shape. I'm not a fan of that stuff. And for the longest time, I thought that was the only game in town. And right. So I thought I did not like cranberry sauce. But in fact, I had some really nice artisanal cranberry sauce, and it was quite good.
It makes a difference.
I don't know. I gotta argue with you. Noel, I've had like the like fresh ones like a bunch of times, not canberries. The really gross slime ones, those are the best.
The kind where it still has the shape of the can.
It has the rivets.
And it slowly falls out of the can. It's so slow.
Oh, it's like dog food.
I feel you.
Oh, it's great.
It's kind of like, it's
you
weird.
Can have it. You can have it all, Max.
It's weird the way that.
I will. We have a Reticulous History Thanksgiving together. Yeah. I will have just like multiple cans of it, and I'll eat it right next to Noel, just straight out of the can.
And I'll bring my Cthulhu turkey. We'll have a big old time. It's funny, though, because the canonization or standardization of what constitutes a Thanksgiving meal kind of reminds me of something that's been on my mind for a few months now, which is the gradual disappearance of McDonald's mascots. They went the way kind of chicken pot pie. When's the last time you saw Grimace or the Hamburglar or Mayor, what's his name? McCheese.
Mayor McCheese.
Mayor McCheese. Yeah. They've
I don't think there are a lot of use them anymore, are they?
They don't. And Vice has a really great article on the disappearance of Ronald McDonald, which is kind of cryptic, actually. Maybe we can do an episode.
Although he does still survive in the philanthropic wing of McDonald's, the Ronald McDonald House. Their logo still is a kind of weird gloved clown hand holding hands with a child's hand.
That's right.
Which is a little sinister, but it's the one place you still see the Ronald McDonald name even thrown around.
And the old statues, I guess. They're not making new commercials. If they do make new commercials, if you're listening, McDonald's commercial makers, go back to that very first terrifying old school Ronald McDonald clown. You guys remember that one? Did you ever see that guy?
Yeah. Yeah. Nightmare fuel.
Yes.
Big red wig, right? Big red kind of fuzzy, frizzy wig. Or am I thinking of?
Oh, it's worse. Original? It's so much worse. Hang on.
Oh, good Lord. He's got like a cup on his nose?
Yeah, and like the blood of children smeared across his face.
Wow.
Yeah, and he had a magic belt, kind of like fanny pack thing.
For what? Whipping children with, presumably?
No, to generate burgers and fries and milkshakes.
This is absolute nightmare fuel.
We'll check out the video.
He's got some kind of box on his head. It looks like a box of...
This is way worse than the turkey.
I think I've still got some Halloween in me, guys. So
clearly. Well, I did say from the start that Thanksgiving is a terrifying holiday.
I mean, that was my pitch to you guys for us doing this at this time.
I'm into it.
We had a nice little bridge here because our first episode took place during October, but now this episode is coming out in November. So we're kind of crossing the calendar stream here. We're making new traditions, right? And that's what
I'm all about.
The U.S. was trying to do at this time. But despite the success of beautiful things like the Union League Club's Thanksgiving dinner, people in the South still didn't like the idea of following the Northern model of a Thanksgiving holiday. It wasn't until after the end of the Reconstruction era that Southern community leaders began to celebrate Thanksgiving in the Northern way because they wanted the South to get back into the national commercial life. That's really what it was. They wanted businesses to come back and invest. And because of this, they felt an incentive to conform, really, is probably the best way to say it.
That's right. They did have to kind of show solidarity in some way or another, right? same way that Germans, you know, after the Nazi regime were toppled, had this kind of collective guilt almost. There's even a word for it in German. I believe it's Begangenheitsbewältigung. Ooh. And it refers specifically to a collective national guilt surrounding the Holocaust. So there obviously was a culture of, you know, never forgetting, you know, certain relics became illegal and very heavily regulated. I'm not comparing the South at the end of the Civil War to Nazi Germany. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying there's a similar kind of, you know, zeitgeisty kind of need to conform and make amends.
Yeah, and this conformity is culinary in part. They have to start making turkey dinners and pumpkin pies, which they regarded largely as a northern thing. The editors of national magazines, again, most of the big magazines were made in the Northeast. They all stepped up and followed Hale's example. That's why if you look at publications like Harper's Bazaar, Godey's Ladies Book, and Good Housekeeping, you'll see so many like recipe ideas for Thanksgiving. And newspapers in the South also had these detailed instructions. Thanksgiving now was no longer a thing where you would just get together with your loved ones and, you know, cook whatever you happen to have on hand. Now it was increasingly codified. Thanksgiving equals turkey, which is probably great for the turkey industry. Let's be honest. Thanksgiving equals cranberries. Thanksgiving equals pumpkin pies.
And here's something that's interesting. We were just talking about our preferences for cranberry sauce. It turns out that cranberries weren't even a fruit that was cultivated south of New Jersey. It was very much a northern, crop. So the fact that Southerners started to include that in their meals showed that kind of solidarity, and that they were like ready to, you know, kind of buckle down and become part of the union. And again, I was gonna take it out, but I'm just gonna edit myself ever so slightly. We know that there was not some sort of collective guilt or that instantly the South felt bad for what they had done. That's literally what, you know, led to racism and the long, hard period of Reconstruction. And then, of course, into segregation. So it's not like all of a sudden, oh, we lost. We see the error of our ways. We're going to start doing Thanksgiving and we're going to be good boys and girls. That is not how it went. It was a lot of it was probably pageantry to, you know, just to get things back to normal. But a lot of simmering resentments certainly remained.
Yeah.
Simmering like a nice pan of cranberry sauce.
Yeah. And if you go forward to the 1880s, you see places like the Augusta Chronicle, which should be familiar to you, Noel. Commenting,
sure is.
Yeah, commenting things like, we dare say most of the Thanksgiving will take the form of gastronomic pleasure. Every person who can afford turkey or procure it will sacrifice the noble American fowl today. This is just an example of how it's odd because it seems so coordinated, right? Every publication of note is saying, don't just give thanks, but specifically eat turkeys and eat cranberries. And if the Macon Telegraph even said, and if you can afford it, you know, pop open some wine. You know what I mean? Party time.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
This episode is brought to you by eBay Motors. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Noel, do you remember your favorite car?
Well, yeah. It was a an Eddie Bauer edition Ford Explorer.
Oh, that's and cool.
I just remember it was my dad's. I was a hand-me-down car kind of kid. Dad would buy a new car. I'd get that car. And I just remember feeling so awesome being up above everybody. Like I was in Mad Max or something, you know?
I had a lot of land yachts that I loved. I had Pontiac Bonnevilles.
Right.
Oh, I never had an El Camino. My dad had one. And that was a real interesting use of our collective time, keeping that thing running. But I think these cars all kind of speak to us because they were such a fundamental part of our lives. Do you remember when I had that Monte Carlo?
That's what I meant. I said El Camino and I meant Monte Carlo.
I miss it. So the Monte Carlo was tough. I had a series of Monte Carlos, and the last one, God bless it, I had to learn a lot about car maintenance just to keep that guy running.
Totally.
But it still was like a perfect fit. It's almost like finding your true love. You know, like when you recently got a car a few years back now.
Oh, man. And funny you should say that. That particular perfect fit was the Honda Fit, which I love dearly. But, Ben, it's getting a little long in the tooth. And while it's been incredibly reliable up to now, it's getting to that age where I might have to start looking for some parts here and there to keep it running.
Mm-hmm. And that's where eBay Motors comes in. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly.
Brake kits, LED headlights, roof racks, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it.
And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back.
Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash.
So keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com.
Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
There's nothing worse than wearing clothes that don't fit right. That's why Tomboy X makes size and gender inclusive underwear, swimwear, and loungewear for all bodies. Queer founded and run for over 10 years, you can trust they know a thing or two about making the perfect pair. Feel comfortable in your own skin. Shop online today and use code IHEART for 20% off your first purchase. Only at TomboyX.com. Tomboy X, fit for you just as you are.
This became, over this period of the 1880s to about 1890, this became a more and more commonly celebrated holiday and celebrated in an increasingly uniform way. It became so popular, in fact, that the Charlotte News remarked that Thanksgiving as a holiday was second only to Christmas, which I don't know. What do you guys think about that in the hierarchy of holidays?
It's pretty popular in terms of like a big family gathering and one that is given a lot of precedent, you know, in workplace situations,
True.
In terms of definitely having to have it off. I would say they're neck and neck.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I would say, look, they gotta be like, yeah, Christmas is one. I mean,
Arbor Day.
What would be else be consideration? Independence Day, mm-hmm. New Year's Day,
Indigenous Peoples Day.
Yes.
Apparently we still don't call it that in the South. That's a bit of a bummer.
Yeah.
No, we don't.
There's also, let's see, there's Memorial Day, right?
Yeah, that's a big one.
That's a big one.
Labor Day.
Labor Day. Halloween.
I'm mostly just thinking the days that we get half days here at iHeart.
Yeah, you're thinking of the days we get days off. Yes. And of course, Juneteenth, which I'm happy to say is now a holiday at our company. Anyhow, Thanksgiving becomes very popular. A typical menu for 1890 Thanksgiving would be stuff like oysters, which is cool, roast turkey with cranberry sauce, sweet potatoes, celery, and Irish potatoes. It's just two potatoes.
AKA potatoes?
Yeah, I know. I was thinking that too. But that's...
I was trying to think what an Irish potato is. Like, how is that any different?
Well, you know, if you've ever been to like Five Guys Burgers and Fries, they have a board that tells you where their potatoes come from every time. And they're from all over the country. But when I think of an Irish potato, isn't it just kind of like a russet type potato, like a big spud?
It's just to differentiate it, from the sweet potato. So there is something cool here. The South starts passing on its own Thanksgiving traditions. For an explanation of this, we'll turn to William R. Ferris, who is a history professor and senior associate director at the Center for the Study of the American South at UNC. In Ferris's estimation, you can see the Southern touches on the traditional Thanksgiving. Like you might have soul food. Cornbread dressing is a big thing. You might have candied yams. People also might cook their turkeys differently, like fry a turkey. That's pretty cool. Or make dressing with fresh oysters. I've never done
that. Have you? I love oyster dressing. Yep, my mom has. She's also a big fan of making oyster stew on Christmas morning, which is some sort of a tradition. But yeah, exactly. Oyster dressing is fabulous. If you're into oysters, they're not fried. They're kind of chopped, but they just add a little of that umami to it. I'm a big fan of mushroom dressing, like just different types. Like give me like three or four different types of dressing. It's the best.
All right, I have a weird, completely off-topic story about oysters, but I'm going to throw it in here.
Yeah.
When I was out in Seattle, I met up with my buddy, and he had driven up from Portland. I had flown, from Atlanta to Seattle. It was, 5 p.m. I hadn't eaten. We're like, all right, we're just going to get some food. So we went to this pizza place. Turned out to be really nice, and we're looking at the menu, and we're like, all right, it's got an, oyster pizza.
Go on.
Is this going to be any good? We just ordered it. It was, the best thing I've eaten in my entire life.
What kind of cheese did it have?
I have no earthly idea. I just thought it had oysters and ordered it. And I was like, I asked my buddy, I'm like, hey, would you be down to split this? And he's like, sure, man, I'll eat something weird with you. I'm super hungry.
That's awesome. Yeah, we got to try that. And Max, let us know if you can recall the name of that place.
We'll do.
Because my social life is very interesting, I find myself just reading menus of restaurants across the world at the weirdest times. Actually, no, I can predict it. It's usually when I should be eating something. I'm like, what is the best restaurant in Bangladesh? What do they serve on their menu? What would I get there? So the reason I bring up that example is of kind of living vicariously through the idea of these foods. And foods are a powerful folkway. They are a uniter and sometimes a divider. And maybe one of the reasons Thanksgiving became so popular in this country now is because it feels, for most people, apolitical, right? You're putting aside differences to have a very traditional meal with each other. And Ferris points out, I think Ferris would agree with us on this,
He certainly would. Yeah, he it certainly was, again, something that none of the three of us had associated with it at all. But it wasn't fully during this Civil War period that this step actually happened. It wasn't until 1939 that President Franklin Roosevelt briefly moved Thanksgiving up an entire week in a pretty misguided effort to extend that shopping period before Christmas.
Yeah.
And I believe people kind of collectively lost their minds, or at the very least just did not do it.
Right. 16 different states said, get out of here with that. Get out of here with your weird calendar shenanigans. And this led Roosevelt to actually reverse his decision 2 years later. And so in the fall of 1941, U.S. Congress passed a resolution returning the holiday to the fourth Thursday of November and making it a permanent thing. So presidents no longer had to issue a new declaration or proclamation every single year. And in this case, we also give a kudos to Sarah Hale, because she had chosen the very similar date, the last Thursday in November, for Thanksgiving, because she thought it would be distraction-free. It's after the fall harvest, and it's after any potential elections. With that, I think the best way to end our story here is to ask ourselves what happened to our Thanksgiving protagonist, our champion of culinary traditions, Sarah Josepha Hale.
Catherkey.
Yes. All hail.
Old school Ronald McDonald.
Ronald McDonald and Catherkey. It's just, oh man. I don't know why that image makes my day, but yes, those dudes, but also Sarah Josepha Hale.
She went on to, have a really successful career as an actor in a very popular HBO series called Sex and the City.
Yeah. Little known fact. Little known fact.
No, I obviously kid. She would, in fact, continue despite, having her whole master plan, her evil holiday master plan, successfully enacted. She continued to have a pretty big impact on Thanksgiving moving forward. She also changed the way elementary school kids learned about the whole mythos of the first Thanksgiving, right? Before Sarah's big old campaign for Thanksgiving, that romanticized version that I'm talking about wasn't really a thing. But in 1865, Sarah described the first Thanksgiving as this kind of, you know, a little bit pat, romanticized meeting between the Pilgrims and Native Americans, and how it was all, you know, maize and handshakes and hugs. And it got reprinted in a bunch of publications.
Yeah.
And in around 5 years, that became the narrative. And though it's not historically accurate, it is what people went with.
No, airbrush doesn't begin to describe it. In fact, studies show the first Thanksgiving was probably a lot more like a political negotiation as opposed to a turkey party. Sarah Hale went on to spend 40 years as the editor of Godey's Lady's Book. She published her very last column in December of 1877. She was widely known as the mother of Thanksgiving when she passed away in April of 1879 at the age of 90.
Yeah, she's kind of a, I don't know, that idea of the story of Thanksgiving that she sort of, you know, popularized, to me is largely the checkered part of her legacy. You know, I have no problem with the holiday and it being a time of thanks. And it is, you know, again, a really good way of introducing some culinary, you know, activities into otherwise, you know, maybe homes that wouldn't normally cook. I think that's cool. But, you know, the whole like, and then the Indians welcomed the settlers with open arms and said everything was all cool. And right. They just ate foods together and totally gave them the thumbs up. You know, that's kind of the vibe.
And continued that version of that story. Through the Trail of Tears. Everything was fine. Everybody had a turkey break.
Everything was great.
Yeah. That's unfortunately, as we see, you know, there was a lot of propaganda involved in the creation of this as a unifying cultural touchstone. But Thanksgiving or some version of it is not restricted to the U.S. We know of a wonderful story of a tiny little island, part of Australia, hundreds and hundreds of miles away from the mainland, home to less than 2,000 people. It's Norfolk Island, and they love Thanksgiving.
Yeah, apparently the island was originally populated by folks who were descended from some British sailors who actually did a mutiny on the HMS Bounty, and they survived and took several Tahitians captive, where they fled to Pitcairn Island in 1790. And then they obviously, you know, had kids and stuff. And then in 1856, their kids moved to the larger island nearby, Norfolk Island. So it's become kind of a weird combination of Tahitian and, you know, European Thanksgiving kind of celebration.
Yeah, so if you happen to be in Norfolk Island, it's the last Wednesday in November, then you can hang out at their Thanksgiving service. So you might ask yourself, hang on, why do these folks almost on the other side of the world celebrate this American holiday? Well, we have the answer thanks to Anne Eubank over at Atlas Obscura. She explains that Norfolk Island has always been kind of a pit stop for people who are traveling by sea. And in 1887, as we're getting to the height of Thanksgiving's acceptance, there's a resident of Norfolk Island, a guy named Isaac Robertson, who becomes the American consul, meaning he's the diplomatic representative of the United States. And so one year, he decided he wanted to celebrate Thanksgiving. So he decorated the pews of the local church with palm leaves and lemons, and He just made it a thing. He just made it happen. Hey, everybody, check out American culture. When he passed away, people kept up the holiday with their own twist. And yeah. Yeah.
You know, because I was wondering, I said something like sort of offhandedly, like, oh, so I guess they were celebrating sort of like a hybrid sort of UK version of Thanksgiving, which isn't really a thing. They do celebrate a Thanksgiving-esque holiday with some of the same trimmings, like with turkey and stuff, but it's more of a fall harvest festival than it would be considered Thanksgiving. So this was sort of a three times removed Americanized Thanksgiving sort of celebration. It's very interesting.
Yeah. And every family in the U.S. tends to have their own sort of traditions for this time of year. For example, you may have a relative who always makes the same casserole every year, and that's like what they're known for, their corn casserole or what have you. You may have traditional side dishes, or you may have a spot you always meet at. We'd love to hear more about your personal Thanksgiving traditions. And then we'd love to hear your ideas of, or I'd love to hear ideas of if every holiday that we named in the show had like a meal, like if there was, we know there's a Christmas feast, right? People have goose in Britain for Christmas sometimes. But what would the meal be for, you know, Memorial Day or Arbor Day? Or what are the other ones we named?
Arbor Day, it would be presumably just dried leaves or something. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Or what? Bark. A whole tree.
Or the tree eats you because we're respecting the tree, right?
Okay.
Sacrifice. Wow. Sacrifice, blood sacrifice to the trees. I'm into it.
We keep going dark in this one. Peek behind the curtains, folks. We are recording this just a few days before Halloween. Maybe that's it. You guys got any costume ideas, by the way?
I have decided to be a middle-aged white man.
Yeah, I have decided to be a just slightly younger than Noel middle-aged white man.
Oh, you guys are doing a couple's costume.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It's going to work great.
So what a wild ride. This is, I don't know about you guys, but this has definitely made me hungry, which means that instead of actually eating, I'm probably going to read menus from other countries.
Well, I ordered too much Chinese food for lunch, so I am going to do what for many is also a Thanksgiving tradition and eat a ton of Chinese food.
Right.
And with that, we give thanks. That's sort of a tradition of our show. We're sort of a very thanks-forward show, if you think about it. We end every episode with pouring our hearts out in thanksgiving to all those who've made this show possible, including Max Williams, super producer extraordinaire, Alex Williams, who composed our theme, Gabe Lussier, the king of Thanksgiving, the great pumpkin, Gabe Lussier.
Our number one turkey, Jonathan Sibley.
Our number one turthuckin. No, that sounds weird. What did you call it, Ben?
Kathurki.
A Kathurki. Got it. That's definitely a Strickland kind of vibe. Who else?
Let's see. We've also got Christopher Hasiotis. Eve's Jeffcoat. And also big thanks to our dear friend, Casey Pegram. A big thanks to everybody for tuning into the show. If you want to drop us a review on Apple somewhere, we would greatly appreciate that. That does make a difference. But as Noel said, we are immensely thankful for all of our ridiculous historians tuning in. And I want to thank this life-size plastic skeleton I live with now, Scully. And thanks for making this such a Halloween-y episode, too, guys. I'm so excited. I was surprised we kept going dark with it.
Anything to extend the greatest holiday of the year. Though I do like a good turkey leg. We'll see you next time, folks. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
There's nothing worse than wearing clothes that don't fit right. That's why Tomboy X makes size and gender-inclusive underwear, swimwear, and loungewear for all bodies. Queer-founded and run for over 10 years, you can trust they know a thing or two about making the perfect pair. Feel comfortable in your own skin. Shop online today and use code IHEART for 20% off your first purchase. Only at TomboyX.com. Tomboy X. Fit for you just as you are.
This episode of Ridiculous History is brought to you by Avalon Waterways. Ben, are you in major need of a vacation right now?
Noel, you're a mind reader. I am, and aren't we all?
We are. While cruising remains popular, there's something big happening in the industry, and that is, my friend, smaller ships.
True story. The intimate ships of Avalon Waterways can go where the big ships can only dream, through winding passageways of rolling vineyards and castled hills into the heart of timeless cities and storybook villages.
That sounds like a delight. See how Avalon's smaller ships promise greater discoveries, fewer people, and more of everything.
Limited time special offers await at avalonwaterways.com.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring? but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you, from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.